Amen. So I just wanted to cover one thing here out of 2 Kings chapter number 23 that I really didn't have time to get to this last Thursday. And I think it's an important topic, and I don't want to just gloss over it. Plus, it's such a great chapter because there's so much going on here. But I just want to look at the nine verses between verses 21 and 30, where it talks about how the king commanded the people, verse 21, saying, "Keep the Passover, the Lord your God, as is written in the book of the covenant." So if you remember, Josiah is this great king. He's having this great revival. God is holding off his wrath to not destroy Jerusalem for his sake. And Josiah, in the meantime, you know, he's doing these great things. We just read about all the idols he's breaking down, how he's cleaning house, he's getting rid of the Sodomites, he's breaking down all the groves. He's really, you know, setting everything straight. So he's doing this great revival. He's this great king who does good. And if you look there in verse 25, it says, "And like unto him, there was no king before him that turned to the Lord with all his heart and with all his soul and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses. Neither after him arose any like him." So there was nobody like Josiah in the sense that he turned to the Lord with all his heart. And when we know the history leading up to Josiah's reign, of course, we know it's because of the fact that that's a very true statement, because of all the idolatry and all the abominations that are being taken place, that it really took a lot for, you know, somebody to set everything straight. He was really going against the tide. So he's this great character in the scripture. But, it, you know, unfortunately, Josiah did have, I believe, a tragic and early death. You know, his death is a tragedy. Now, we just kind of got the background there in 2 Kings 23. But if you would go to 2 Chronicles chapter number 35, we're going to look a little bit more at his death this evening and why it is that he died such a tragic death. Because if you remember in 2 Kings 21 verse 1, it says he was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. So his reign ends when he's 39 years old. So he's a very young man when he dies. He's not this ancient king. You know, he's somebody that died, I believe, tragically. You have to say, well, why is that? Why is somebody who did so much good, somebody who managed to, you know, bring such revival to such a backslidden people, you know, what a tragedy that he didn't get to stick around and continue that. Why is it that he died so soon? Why is it that Israel could not continue on experiencing the revival and everything that was taking place? Well, it was because of Josiah's own actions. It wasn't because God judged him. Often we'll see that. We've seen that throughout the book of the Kings and Chronicles, that God would judge these kings, that they would die an early death. In fact, you know, going forward here, you're going to see there's some kings in Judah that just, it's like 1 year, 2 years, a lot of them just, they come in quick succession leading up to the captivity. But Josiah is not that way. You know, he started out at 8, he reigned 31 years, it seemed like he had a good run, then just all of a sudden he's cut off. And you have to ask yourself, why is it? Why does he die this early tragic death, in my opinion? 2 Chronicles chapter number 32, if you look at verse 25, it says, "And Jeremiah lamented for Josiah." So here you have a king where the prophet Jeremiah is lamenting him after his death. "And all the singing men and all the singing women spake of Josiah in lamentations to this day and made an ordinance in Israel, and behold, they are written in the lamentations." So this wasn't just, you know, your run-of-the-mill king in King Josiah. You know, this is why, we have people that are named Josiah, right? It's a great namesake to pass on. You know, it's we don't name our kids, you know, Beelzebub. We don't name our kids, you know, these other wicked names. We don't name them Ahab, you know, at least we shouldn't be, right? But, we don't name them these things because there's nothing noteworthy. You know, we use this name Josiah because of the fact that he truly was a great king. And I'm just trying to emphasize the fact that, you know, he died a tragic death, that it's a real shame that he wasn't able to last longer, because if you know the story, shortly after that, that's when God finally sends the destruction. That's when God, you know, afterwards decides, okay, I told you I wouldn't send it in your days. Now you're gone. Now here it comes. Okay, so it's tragic in the sense that he died young, but also that, you know, God's hand was not stayed longer than it could have been. In any case, what led to the death of Josiah? That's what we're getting at here. If you back up in 2 Chronicles chapter 32 and look at verse 19, it says, "In the 18th year of the reign of Josiah," if you notice that's what we were reading about in 2 Chronicles 23, that's the same time frame. In the 18th year of the reign of Josiah was this Passover kept. After all this, when Josiah had prepared the temple, Necho, king of Egypt, came up to fight against Carchemish by Euphrates, and Josiah went out against him. So he's going out to fight against him, and he says in verse 21, "But he sent ambassadors to him," meaning that Necho sent ambassadors to him, saying, "What have I to do with thee, thou king of Judah? I have come not against thee this day, but against the house wherewith I have war. For God commanded me to make haste, forbear thee from meddling with God, who is with me, that he destroy thee not." Now, spoiler, this leads to his death. Okay, he goes out and he fights this battle. But notice that he's not fighting a battle that he's called to fight. He's just going out and picking a fight. He's just going out and he sees Necho coming up. And he says, you know, I'm just going to go out there and get involved with this conflict that doesn't involve me. And this is what leads to his death. You know, it's kind of interesting, too, that he says there, Necho says, God commanded me to make haste. And he's saying, don't meddle with God who is with me. You know, and you have to remember that's what that guy is saying. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's true. You know, he's kind of invoking the deity. Because if you know, in Jeremiah chapter number 46, after this all takes place, you know, 4 years later, God sends the Babylonians to destroy Pharaoh Necho in the same place in Carchemish. So is God really with him? My guess is no. He's just kind of saying that. You know, we can't delve into the psyche of these people. We don't know what's going through their minds. But sometimes, I was reading this, I'm kind of wondering, I wonder if that maybe that's what provoked him a little bit. When Josiah, we know that God is with him, and God is using him, and when he hears this heathen king say, well, God's with me, you know, maybe that kind of pushed him over the edge. I'm not saying that's the case, but, you know, it could be. You know, that's the kind of thing where people fall into that kind of a trap. They put themselves out there, they go beyond their bounds, and all because of this attitude of, I'll show him. That kind of a thing. Well, I'll show them. You know, you think God's with you? Well, I'll show you he's really with me. That kind of a mentality. And ultimately, this led to his downfall, right? So he's going out there to pick this fight in Carchemish with Josiah and Carchemish between them by Euphrates. Josiah goes out against him. He tells him, forbear thee from meddling with God who is with me, that he destroy thee not. He's saying, don't get involved. This doesn't concern you. This isn't any of your business. So what led to the death of Josiah here? What led to this early tragic death where we could have had many more years of revival, many more years of worshiping the Lord, of bringing people to the Lord? What led to that? It was meddling. Something as simple as just going out and getting involved in something that doesn't concern you brought great tragedy into his life. It's you know, you would think, oh, maybe he got into some sin. You know, maybe he got into some wicked sin and God had to chasten him and punish him and cut him off early. Or maybe like so many other great kings before him, you know, his heart got turned away and he started worshiping idols and things like that. Maybe it was that. No, it was something as simple as him meddling with other people. That's what led him to being destroyed. And I think it's an important lesson, you know, because this is something we can all be guilty of. This is something we all have to keep in check in our own lives, that we don't overreach in our lives and start to meddle with other people or try to get involved in things that don't concern us, okay? Because meddling, you say, what is meddle? What does it mean to meddle with somebody? It simply means to interfere or busy yourself with that which is not your concern, right? So when you see some situation or somebody else's business, you just want to get involved, and it really has nothing to do with you. I mean, that's what's going on in the story, right? He sees Pharaoh Necho coming up against Carchemish and Euphrates, and he just says, well, I'm going to go fight this battle. He says, look, I'm not fighting against you. This is a foreign land. This isn't Judah. This isn't, you know, somewhere in Israel. This is, you know, some other distant land outside Israel's borders. And he's saying, well, I'm just going to go fight this battle. And really what it is, and I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, is it's pride. You know, I believe Josiah's ultimate downfall was his pride. When he's on top of things, you know, when everything's going great, he's kind of feeling his oats, right? He's feeling his Wheaties. He says, well, you know, I'm going to go out there and show this heathen king a thing or two. And then he says, and then the heathen king says, well, hey, God's with me. Oh, yeah, well, I'll show you God's actually with me. It's pride. It's meddling. And these things, you know, these simple things that we just kind of overlook, these little flaws are what brought him down ultimately. And not because God was chastening him, not because God was, upset with the fact that he did this. He certainly wasn't, I believe, pleased by it. He didn't tell him to do it. But because of the fact that, you know, when you meddle with things, when you get involved in things that are none of your business, you know, you can't control how things are going to turn out. You put yourself in a situation that's not really your business. You don't have any say in how things are going to turn out. You can't control that situation any more than if it were your business. You know, even if it weren't meddling, you know, we never know how things are going to turn out, how conflicts are going to turn out. So why invite more conflict into our lives? Why invite more strife, more difficulty than, you know, we need to? Because we don't know how things are going to turn out. You know, things could go sideways on us in a hurry, just like they did for Josiah. So he gets this message from the king, and he says, don't meddle with me. Don't mess with me. Stay out of this. This is none of your business. And it's kind of, this. I don't know why this always strikes me as funny, but verse 22, nevertheless, Josiah would not turn his face from him, but disguised himself. You know, and maybe it's just my vivid imagination running wild, but I always try to, like, I always envision somebody, like, putting on those, like, stupid glasses with the nose and the mustache, you know, like the disguise glasses. Like, he's, obviously that's not what he was doing, but, you know, it's just humorous to me. When he's talking about disguise, like, what did he do exactly? Was he trying to dress up like somebody else or something? You know, you think, what kind of disguise did he put on? But he disguises himself, and that he might fight with him and hearken not unto the words of Necho from the mouth of God, and came to fight in the valley of Megiddo. So he says, you know what, I'm going to get involved anyway. I'm not going to stay out of this. I'm going to stick my nose where it doesn't belong, but I'm going to disguise myself. So not only is he meddling, but he's going to great lengths to do so, isn't he? It's not like he's just overheard a conversation and was kind of like, oh, what was that about? You know, and trying to start asking questions. You know, he's meddling and he's going to great lengths to meddle with other people. And we do not want to be these type of people who want to get involved in other people's business, who are going to make it our business to get in your business. We don't want to do that. We don't want to go to great lengths to meddle, because that's what he's doing. You know, he could have just kind of, was he meddling when he decided to go? Yeah, he was. But then he gets the word, he gets the message to not do it, and instead of just backing off, he says, no, I'm going to do this. So he disguises himself and goes anyway. So he's going to great lengths to meddle, and, you know, it almost kind of reminds me of passive-aggressive behavior. Right, he's like, well, it's not me that's doing it. It's this guy that I'm disguised as that's doing it. You know, was that you out there in the battlefield, Josiah? Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. You know, I don't know. Did he kind of look? It's this kind of, you know, this passive aggressive. This is the type of behavior sometimes people have when they meddle or they're trying to mess with people. Right, the sulking, the backhanded compliments, procrastination. You know, withdrawal, refusing to communicate. These are all passive-aggressive behaviors, okay? And that's kind of a different sermon, but it always kind of reminded me of that whenever I'd read that, about him disguising himself and meddling. It's like somebody who's being kind of passive-aggressive. But what I really want to point out here is the context of this meddling, okay? So where is this taking place? It's taking place in a war, right? He's getting himself involved in a war that isn't his business. So meddling, in a way, is a form of contention, right? When you're meddling with people, you're getting involved in conflict often. You know, it's a way to kind of be in contention. And that makes sense because, again, only by pride cometh contention, right? So if Josiah is kind of maybe a little proud at this moment, he's lifted up with pride, it makes sense that he's going to meddle, that he's going to contend because he's lifted up with that pride. It's interesting, too, in the story it says, you know, he disguises himself, and then verse 23, and the archers shot at King Josiah. It's like, well, that's him. You know, it doesn't always work out, right? And again, it always reminds me of that passive-aggressive behavior. Like, people think that they're getting away with it, but everyone, like, the people that they're being, that they're attacking, it's like, well, I see what you're doing, right? You know, we can see how they're behaving, right? The sulking, right? We don't know anybody that would ever sulk, right? Children would never do this. Right, you know, children would never have an outright attack against their parents. They wouldn't just aggressively lash out at their parents, but they might do it in a passive way. Right, they would sulk, they would procrastinate. You know, they would do things like that, and it's obvious to anybody else. We could just say it's like, well, look at, we know what you're doing, right? It's like Josiah going out there, disguising himself, thinking he's going to get away with it. Oh well, I'm not really. It's not me that's fighting, and it's like the archers are like, oh, there he is, and they just shoot him. Right, this isn't like with Ahab, where a man drew a bow at a venture, right? And it smote him between. It was just a, kind of like a chance thing. You know, God made it happen. They see him like, oh, that's Josiah. Like, something about, apparently his disguise wasn't good enough. Apparently it took more than those disguise glasses with the big eyebrows and the mustache to disguise himself from, you know, being identified as Josiah. Like, he needed to get a, he should have gone down to the costume store or whatever and done a little bit better. So they shoot at him. They knew it was him anyway. And it says in verse 24, and his servants took him out of the chariot and put him in the second chariot that he had, and they brought him to Jerusalem, and he died. And he was buried in one of the sepulchres of his father, and all Judah and Jerusalem mourned for him. So it's this really, again, a very tragic story And it's all brought about because of the fact that he meddled. Because he just didn't have enough sense to stay out of business that didn't belong to him. To just stay out of it and to not get involved. So this is something we have to take heed to. And again, I wanted to touch on this. Ran out of time Thursday night, but this is an important thing. Because today, you know, we can meddle with people in a lot of different ways. People can get involved in things that aren't their business, even to a much easier degree today, right? People can go out and contend today and get involved in other people's business. And people do this all the time. If you really think about it and you look for it, people are meddling constantly. It's almost a form of entertainment. You know, it might take the form of gossip or contention or whatever it is, but I mean, I'm pretty sure daytime television is probably still rife with, you know, the talk shows where it's, you know, some talk, you know, host getting involved in other people's business, having an entire, you know, live audience there. Everyone just wants to hear these people's business and get involved in their business. I mean, it's like entertainment today, right? People are always meddling, getting involved in things that don't belong unto them. And we even do this in our personal lives. People can do this even in their personal lives. And one way that they do this is online or other digital, you know, interactions. It could be, you know, the text group. It could be the WhatsApp. You know, it could be whatever it is. You know, today meddling is so much easier to do. It's brought right to your front door. It's so easy to just pull out the phone and just, you know, make a comment or just say something and just start meddling or start asking questions or getting in the gossip group and start meddling with business that does not belong unto you. Now, look, if you're guilty of this, I'm not saying that you should look out for, you know, a bunch of arrows are going to rain down on you at some point, that you're literally going to die. But you know, it is going to bring harm into your life. It is going to hurt you in some way. When people start to meddle, they get in trouble. If you would, go over to Proverbs chapter number 26. Actually, go to Proverbs 20. Proverbs chapter number 20. Because again, meddling, it takes on the form of contention. It takes on the form of debates. It takes on the form, in Josiah's case, warfare, right? He's going out and he's contending with this king. And what does the king say he's doing? He says, you're meddling. Don't meddle. Stop contending with me, right? The Bible says in Proverbs chapter 23, if you look at 20, excuse me, verse 3, it says, it is an honor for a man to cease from strife. It is an honor for a man to cease from strife. We don't want to be people who are looking for strife. And this is what people who meddle do. They want to stir the pot. They want to make things contentious. Because they love drama. They love to, you know, get people riled up. They like to get people at odds. They're into that. People are like this, folks. People get really into this type of thing. Look, we probably could all think of people that are like this. You know, you have that relative who's always just making the comment or having to bring something up and always finding that hot button issue to push. And just why? Just to get other people mad at each other. Just because they love contention. What are they doing? They're meddling. They're meddling people who just want to mess with people and get them involved and get them fighting one another. We should not be like that. We should not seek strife because it says there, it is an honor for a man to cease from strife, but every fool will be meddling. It's a foolish thing to be somebody who meddles in the lives of others, meddles and gets involved in business that does not belong unto them. Okay. Go to Proverbs chapter number 26. Proverbs chapter 26. Look, the Bible has, you know, a lot to say about this subject. The Bible brings up meddling repeatedly. And we have, you know, this story isn't there in 2 Kings 23 just because. You know, it's there because we need to learn this lesson in 2 Chronicles. We have to learn what it is that Josiah did wrong. What did he do wrong? Great king. And the lesson really is, you know, what's at stake. You know, by meddling, you could actually bring quite a bit of harm into your life. That's why it's such a foolish thing to be somebody who meddles, who's always got to get involved in other people's business. Look at Proverbs chapter 26, verse 4. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou be like him. Okay? And this one is kind of in the vein of meddling, maybe more online, right? People are meddling today. They're being contentious. They're stirring up strife. You see this all the time on the internet. You know, and that's a big part of people's lives today. You know, people are connected. People are on their phones. People are online. People are on social media. This kind of stuff is all over. It's all over Twitter. It's all over YouTube. It's all over Facebook. People are constantly at each other. They're constantly, you know, stirring up strife. And what does, you know, what does the Bible say about a person who meddles and stirs up strife? They're a fool. So answer not a fool according to his folly. You know, we should not be people who strive with these people. And look, this, you know, maybe this strikes a little bit closer to home for me, because we get contacted by a lot of foolish people or people who are just trying to stir up strife quite a bit. You know, people are always sending the email or even the voicemail, just trolling and just trying to say some ignorant thing, trying to make people mad, or they're just, you know, they're just ignorant. And I can't tell you how many times I've said, oh, really? Oh, okay. You know, and had a nice little smart remark. And then I thought to myself, this verse comes to mind, answer not a fool according to his folly. And then it's highlight, delete, archive, and move on, right? And find somebody who actually is sincere and help that person. Okay, so that's, you know, applies more to me, I guess. I don't know, but you could probably apply that in your life too. Go to Proverbs chapter number 23. Proverbs chapter number 23. Actually, go to Proverbs 17. I'll just read to you Proverbs 23. It says, speak not in the ears of a fool. Why? For he will despise the wisdom of thy words. You know, sometimes people might be tempted, well, I'm not meddling, I'm just trying to get involved. You know, I'm just trying to help. I'm just trying to, you know, help these people to see the problem here. But, you know, if they're a fool, why would you speak in their ear? Why would you go and speak to them? Speak not in the ears of a fool. Why? Because he will despise the wisdom of thy words. It's like that saying, you're just wasting your breath. Some people aren't worth wasting your breath on. Okay? Proverbs chapter 17, look at verse 14. The beginning of strife is when one letteth out water. Is as one when one letteth out water. I think I quoted this the other night, but you know, that's what the beginning of strife is. You know, think, oh, I'm just gonna meddle a little bit, I'm just gonna get involved in this situation, I'm just gonna give my 2 cents, I'm just gonna find out what's going on. You're gonna start to involve yourself with strife. What you're doing is you're actually it's like letting out water. You know, and I used that illustration, you know, the other night where, you know, if you dam up water and then you just let a little bit of water through, eventually the whole thing breaks through and then there's no stopping it, right? So we want to leave off strife. That's what it says. Therefore, leave off contention before it be meddled with. You know, we don't want to be people who make it a point in our lives to meddle with other people, to get in contentions. You know, and this is a good question you could ask yourself. You know, because if you see some situation that you think maybe you need to get involved in, you need to comment, you know, you have to let your opinion be known, you have to maybe meddle, just ask yourself, you know, what are the consequences of me not getting involved? You know, there's some spat going on, there's some fight that doesn't really involve me. Well, what's going to happen if I don't get involved? You know, what are the consequences for me if I don't get involved? Nothing? Then it's probably not worth getting involved in, is it? I think that's a good rule of thumb. Say, well, when do I know I should get involved? Are you going to suffer any consequences if you don't? No, then it probably doesn't concern you. And there's probably no need to get involved if you doing nothing doesn't change your circumstance whatsoever. If it does nothing to you, if it brings no harm to you, why would you get involved? Just stay out of it. Another area where people kind of meddle or get involved in things that they shouldn't is conspiracies. Okay, now hear me out on this one, all right? Go to Ephesians chapter number 5. Say you're against conspiracies? No, I believe certain conspiracies. Now, I'm not going to lump all conspiracies together. I get it. Some people get involved in these things just out of fun and curiosity. You know, if you want to look into your Sasquatch theory, go ahead. If you want to look into Bigfoot, you know, I think it's kind of one of those harmless ones, right? But look, and I'm saying this because, you know, a lot of these conspiracies, and I don't like to just wing things out there, especially some things that I believe, because you have to back them up, you know, and then unless you explain it thoroughly to people, they're just going to look at you weird, okay? Because some of it does sound crazy, right? But there are certain conspiracies that I feel are true and believe that, quite frankly, I just don't think are worth pursuing, okay? I guess that's all I'll say about it. But here's the thing, you know, people get involved in certain conspiracies and they go down these rabbit holes or whatever, and really what they're doing is they're meddling with things that they just shouldn't be meddling with. Okay, if you would go to Ephesians 5, go to Ephesians chapter 5. Did I have you go there already? Okay, great. Look at verse 11. It says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Now, you might look at that and say, well, it just means don't participate. Obviously, that's true, right? Don't have any fellowship with the works of darkness. Don't participate in what they're doing. That's true. But, you know, but if we're watching every twist and turn of the Illuminati. You know, we're watching all the satanic things that the world is doing. If we're not participating, but we're observing it, we're commenting on it, aren't we kind of getting involved? Aren't we kind of having fellowship with it when we're brushing up against it and paying close attention to it? To me, that is a form of fellowship. It's drawing you in. You know, you're going to sit there and dissect the Super Bowl halftime show, which is demonic, by the way. I think it's just like flat out demonic anymore. You know, you're going to sit there and watch the 2-hour presentation on how demonic it was. You know, to me, you might not have been there up on the stage doing whatever they're doing or whatever. But to me, when you're sitting there and you're just picking all that stuff apart and you're watching and observing it, to me, that is a form of fellowship. And look, this is something I have to really keep in check in my own life because, you know, that stuff is easy to fall into. It's easy to fall into these rabbit holes of conspiracy theories, especially when they start to, you know, hold water. When they start to actually have some merit. You know, because they're, and it's quite honestly, it's frightening at the end of the day. But it says, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. You know, and then look at verse 12. For it is a shame to even speak of those things which are done of them in secret. And yet there are whole channels out there, there's hours of video out there where all they're doing is speaking about the things that are done of them in secret. Right? They're blowing the lid off of Bohemian Grove. They're, you know, now I will say this, if they did manage to get a hold of that laptop, Biden's laptop, I would like to see them blow the lid off. You know what I mean? But people want to make all these videos where they just spend hours talking about all these things, all these wicked things that probably even have a lot of merit to them. But to me, I think about that, and that's like having fellowship. You're kind of meddling in that world. And really, you know, what are you going to walk away with? Probably having seen something you shouldn't have seen, thinking something you shouldn't have thought, feeling depressed, disgusted. I mean, that's, you know, whenever I find myself getting in that stuff, I walk away just like, not only was that a waste of time, but now I'm just depressed about, you know, where we are as a nation. When you find out, you know, that how wicked some of our rulers truly are. You know, find out the things that are going on in this world. You know, the Bible's telling us. We already know. Go to Ephesians chapter 6. That the world's wicked. Like, do we really need a 3-hour expose on the Masons or something like that to explain to us that the world's wicked? I mean, the Bible tells us that. So why would we have to, you know, spend all this time fellowshipping with that? Look at Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, and against spiritual wickedness in high places. Well, there you are. Right? We already know that. So what should be our response? Dig into it, find out what all that is so we can expose it. And look, it's not exposing it. What it is it's entertainment. I'm telling you, some of these conspiracy things, these conspiracy websites, stuff like that, these videos that are made, it's a form of entertainment for people. They're trying to see who can outdo the other one sometimes. I'm not saying all the time, but you know, maybe the people that are making it, they're not just trying to entertain people. They really are sincerely trying to expose things. But sometimes people just watch this stuff just solely to be entertained. You know, and to me, that's a form of fellowship. You know, I'm going to sit down and watch this video and learn about all the wickedness that's out there. The Bible says, hey, we already know we wrestle against, you know, principalities and powers in high places. What does he tell us to do? Verse 13, wherefore take unto the whole armor of God to be able to stand in the evil day. Now, that's our response. It's not to dig into it and find out and get all the nitty-gritty details. And it's to, you know, that should compel us to just live for the Lord and to do God's work. Spend more time, you know, on putting God's work forward rather than just sitting and trying to consume and ingest all of this stuff that's out there in fellowship with it. So maybe that's a little bit more extreme. You know, it probably doesn't apply to everybody in the room. I'm sure a lot of the housewives and mothers aren't struggling with, you know, watching endless loops of conspiracy videos. However, some of you, you know, probably might be. Who knows, right? But here's one. How about this? How about in-laws? Okay, we will go from conspiracy theories to in-laws, right? Because what are we talking about tonight? Meddling, right? This is one that even, you know, good, godly people can be guilty of. You know, they want to get involved in the marriage. you know, their son, their daughter gets married off, and all of a sudden they just want to be involved. You're like, well, what did he say? What did she cook? You know, how did she make that? She gave you macaroni and potatoes. That's too many carbs. You know, she's not giving you veg. You know, they want to meddle in these little things. They want to know every little detail. You know, that is a form of meddling, folks. When you're trying to get involved in the, I mean, if you did that to anybody else, wouldn't you think that's a little inappropriate? If I were to just come up to you and just start asking you details about your marriage, you know, start asking you things just like, well, you know, what are they doing? How are the finances? You know, just whatever. I'm not saying inappropriate things. I'm just saying, you know, asking about things that really are none of my business. If I did that to just any other random couple, any other, you know, stranger out there, you know, people would be like, mind your business. But, oh, because we're related, you know, because it's my child that's involved in this union, now it's perfectly okay for me to just get involved. That's not right. It's not right. And look, when people have this mentality of meddling in the in-laws and meddling in the marriage of their children, you know, it can go to bad places. Oh, if he doesn't treat you right, you can always come back. That's not right. And I've seen that happen. I've seen that happen in Baptist churches. Oh, sweetheart, if he doesn't treat you right, if he raises his voice, if he's too harsh, you just come on back to mommy and daddy and we'll take care of you. That's wicked, folks. That's meddling. That's getting involved. I mean, how would you like that if that was, you know, but those parents, they never think about the fact that, well, what if, you know, your spouse's parents said that to you, to your spouse? You know, what if you were put in that situation? You probably wouldn't appreciate it. So why would you do that? You know, once you marry children off, that's it. They're on their own. Now, obviously, if they need advice, if they need help, you know, that's different. If they're, you know, if it's sincere help, but it's when people start, you know, trying to get involved and give their two cents and manipulate some other person's relationship, that's meddling. That's wicked. And we need to stay out of that. And that's something that can happen to the best of us if we're not careful, okay? What's another area where people can meddle? How about at church? People can meddle at church. Pastors can meddle in people's lives. This is a real thing. You know, I remember hearing a pastor say, it's my job to meddle. He literally said that. And at the time, I was kind of like, I don't know about that. You know, and then you read the Bible and what it says about meddling, I said, I'm pretty sure that's not your job. And then you read about what a pastor's job actually is, you know, to reprove, rebuke, exhort all long-suffering doctrine, to preach the word, to be instant, in season, out of season, to do the work of an evangelist, to labor in the word and doctrine. You know, preaching the Bible is the pastor's job. Meddling in everybody's lives and trying to find out what's going on with everybody and give my two cents and tell you what you're doing wrong and what you should be doing right, you know, that's not really my business. You know, that's not a pastor's business. But pastors do this. You know, and if you've ever been around it, you know what I'm saying is true. You know, and you know, sometimes I think some of us don't realize how good we got it. Being, you know, when you start out in a church like this where people kind of respect the boundaries of other people. I mean, there's pastors out there that'll be like, you want to buy a car? Come talk to me. And I'll tell you what color you should get. You want to paint your house? You think I'm joking? You know, or they all live on the same property. You know, they'll get some Bible college or some giant property and they all go live there. And then they're just watching each other. And you're like, I noticed you weren't out jogging. You know, you're normally jogging. Why aren't you jogging? It's just this weird stuff. It's cult-like. It's creepy. It's weird. You know, quite frankly, I don't understand why pastors want to meddle in people's business. Now, look, if there's people are doing things and behaving in certain ways that have an effect inside the church house, obviously then it becomes the pastor's business. You know, but his authority doesn't extend beyond those doors, right? And again, if people want advice, if people want help, that's different. If people are coming to the pastor and saying, hey, what are your thoughts about this? You know, what do you think about, you know, the situation or whatever? Can I get some godly advice? Obviously, they're there for that. But, you know, it's not the pastor's job to meddle and just offer unsolicited advice on every, you know, in every situation and get involved in people's lives. You know, and that's something I try not to do. I'm careful to not do that and to try to, you know, you say, well, you asked me if I had a good week last week, you know, because you say, hey, I don't know. You sounded like you're meddling a little bit, right? Yeah, that's not meddling. If I had said, hey, so what'd you do Monday? Mm-hmm. What were you doing Tuesday? And what about Wednesday? You know, and start picking apart, you know, okay, well, how'd you spend all your time? That would be me meddling, right? Or telling you how to live your life. Telling you, you know, hey, I don't appreciate what you're doing here. You should change this. You know, that's just weird. It's meddling. And people do that stuff. You know, pastors can do that. Even church members can do that with one another. So on and so forth. If you would, go to Romans chapter number 12. I know we were there this morning, but go to Romans chapter number 12. So, you know, I wanted to touch on this tonight because I think it's an important topic. You know, it's not something I really had a lot of time to cover on Thursday just because of the fact that it's a long chapter and there's a lot more to it. But I didn't want to just gloss over this. And, you know, it's something we have to be careful of. You know, if we're going to be a church family, you know, if we're going to be people that are going to know one another over the years, you know, we have to learn and respect where boundaries are. You know, not cross those and begin to meddle in other people's lives and because that stuff can come back and you know, bite you. I mean, that's what Josiah found out. You know, he went beyond his borders. He went beyond what was appropriate, and it cost him dearly. You know, and it cost the people around him dearly too. I mean, if you meddle, again, it might not lead to your literal physical death, but it might destroy a relationship. You know, you start to meddle in some other church member, some other family member, some other friend's life, you go beyond certain bounds, you know, they might just stop trusting you. It might destroy that friendship. You know, you could kill a friendship. You could kill a relationship. You could, destroy a bond of trust if you meddle. Okay, so it can cost us dearly if we meddle, and we should be careful not to do that. Look there at Romans chapter number 12, verse 3. He says, "For I say through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as God hath given every man the measure of faith." You know, that was Josiah's downfall. He thought more highly than himself than he ought to have. And it's easy to see why, because of the fact that he did such a great work for God, right? He was leading this great revival. God had shown him a lot of grace and mercy. But, you know, he should have kept it, you know, to a certain level. He thought more highly than himself than he ought to have thought. Oh, the Lord's with you? Well, the Lord's with me too. So let me show you how it's done and let me meddle, right? And it cost him. That's what brought him down when you think about it. What brought down Josiah? What was his great sin? Meddling. That's really it. Just pride, meddling. So why preach that? Well, here's the thing. Are we greater than Josiah? Are we more high? Are we thinking more highly than ourselves? Well, I'm greater than he is. No. I mean, he was a great man of God. He was a great king. Great revival. You know, probably a very godly, righteous man, but, you know, he still made this mistake and it cost him dearly. Let's not be guilty of the same. Don't be somebody who meddles. Let's go ahead and pray.